The guest on this episode of the Sports is a Job podcast is Matt Farrell, current president of Farrell Sports Worldwide, a sports marketing and communications consulting agency focusing on teams, leads, governing bodies, and facilities. He brings to the podcast over 20 years of sports experience that includes working for USA Swimming, the Golf Channel, the United States Olympics Committee, and even Warner Home Video. He spent nearly 14 years as the chief marketing officer for USA Swimming from 2005 to 2018. We discuss his journey through working in the Olympic world. More importantly, understanding when the time is right to make that leap or change in your sports industry career. Buckle up and join me on this ride through Matt's journey.
Thanks for having me. My name is Matt Farrell. I'm the president of Farrell Sports Worldwide, a sports marketing and communications agency based in Colorado Springs. And I've spent most of the last 20 plus years in the Olympic world. Most recently, chief marketing officer at USA Swimming. And then the last 2 years as the executive director of World Long Drive with the Golf Channel in Orlando, Florida.
I think you're actually the first, when I think about it, like in my guest list, you're the first that has worked in the Olympics world and the golf world. We've actually had quite a few like entrepreneurs that started their own agency, but I think you're the first to work in the Olympics. So it's going to provide a fresh perspective to everybody, because that's kind of like the one thing that I'm trying to accomplish, is trying to show people like, hey, sports, the industry isn't just the football, baseball, basketball, or soccer. You got hockey, you got the Olympics, you got amateur sports, youth sports. So this is going to be very helpful for everybody listening. But let's start from the beginning. So fresh out of college, what was your first job within the sports industry?
Well, it really started in college, of working in the sports information department at the University of Arkansas. That mainly came about because I got cut from trying to be a walk-on on the baseball team. And so I really started in college athletics, in sports information, or really the sports publicity side of things, and started right after I graduated with almost a year-long graduate assistantship at Purdue University in the athletic department there, doing sports communications and sports information.
And it seems like, so did you get your master's degree? Because from what I saw, you didn't get your master's degree, right?
No, I didn't. I considered it at the time, but I had the opportunity to just immediately jump in and get work experience. And I took that route and just never looked back.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big questions right now. And for you, for someone who has over 20 years of experience working in these different sports, when a college student asks you for that type of advice of whether or not they should go to graduate school and get their master's degree or shouldn't, what do you tell them?
Well, probably like you, Colby, there's no easy or straight answer to this one. I think the master's has a lot of value in sports, especially when it's business and financial related, your job. In my case, I found the practical work and on the job experience was the best path for me at the time. And so it just depends on such a variety of factors. In hindsight, I would probably do the same thing for me again. If I was in college now and considering that I wanted to get into the business aspect of sports, the management side, maybe a little earlier in their career than I did, then I think the master's makes much more sense. But I'm personally a huge, huge believer in the practical work experience in the field you're in while you're an undergrad is the most valuable thing. You know, I've always told people, if you're an undergrad, you could probably make more money being a waiter or a waitress at a restaurant than you will working in sports while you're in college. But if you can afford the luxury of working in sports while you're an undergrad, it will pay off in the long term. But you may have to be jealous of your bartender friends who's making a little bit more money than you in the short term.
Yeah, I think that's always the hard part of it is within that sports industry. It's, you know, sometimes a lot of the internships are working for free, low pay. But again, like you were saying, you can't replace that practical knowledge with anything, the practical experience with anything else. I mean, you truly get that in-depth information of what the sports industry is like, get the hands-on experience, and you can truly learn compared to the classroom, where I think it's a lot of times more theory-based, you know, what ifs, what would you do in this case? But now you're actually throwing yourself in there make these certain type of decisions.
You know, it's hard and it's not easy because it's not, so many jobs aren't paid in undergrad, but, and this is not very popular, but I say to a lot of college students that graduating just with a degree in recreation, sports, journalism isn't enough. You need some internships and experience while you're an undergrad. Otherwise, your resume is in a pile with people who've been, might have two internships or a couple of years volunteer experience under their belt, and that's who your competition is. So as great as many of the degrees out there, sometimes it's not enough to land that first job in sports. You have to have some volunteer or internship experience before you even step foot off the college campus.
And that kind of ultimately is like to, so a bulk of your career within the sports industry is in the Olympic world. And when you talk about your previous experiences before that and what you graduated, you know, you getting into the Olympic world and starting to work in the Olympic world within the sports industry, I mean, it didn't line up, or in the sense of maybe you weren't as qualified compared to what your resume was saying. So how did you end up working in the Olympic world?
You know, that started also while I was an undergrad, and an advisor at Arkansas suggested and gave me a listing for an internship program that was run by the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. And they offered about 20 internships every semester. And so I just applied for an internship, and I was placed at an internship with USA Swimming, which is part of the Olympic movement here in Colorado Springs. But that's something, to your point earlier, that was not, the Olympic world wasn't on my radar as a career. I'd certainly grown up watching the Olympics as a fan, but I'd never even, it never registered to me as a career option until that internship. And so when I was able to do that internship, it was so enlightening, and I loved the culture of the Olympic world. I loved Colorado, and it just completely changed the direction for what I did as a career, from working at my first Olympic Games in Barcelona in 1992 to now working 9 total Olympic Games since then in a combination of summer and winter Olympics. So I found a place that I loved. Then Golf Channel seems like it's off that path, but the common thread to that was I was charged with being the administrator or the commissioner, if you will, of the League of World Long Drive. And so all that time at USA Swimming and the US Olympic and Paralympic Committee was of being involved in sports management and at the league level or the governing body level. And it was a similar role at Golf Channel. It was just overseeing the league and the property of World Long Drive.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned 9 Olympics, and I think everybody's watched the Olympics. What was your favorite Olympics out of all of them that you've worked?
Oh, gosh, that's such a tough, but let me just clarify, because if people are doing the math and they think I'm like 80 years old at this point, the winter and the summer Olympics do alternate years. So it's it's not as long as it sounds. I think in general, I think your first Olympic experiences always stands out. And for me, that was Barcelona, Spain in 1992. That always stands out as being a special moment, working in the research room for NBC. And then you take something out of so many different Olympic games, but my favorite winter games is Nagano, Japan in 1998. I refer to that as the greatest food month of my life, because it was just phenomenal in the culture of Japan. And then, Sydney in 2000 is amazing. And just the spec for different reasons, but just the spectacle of Beijing in 2008 and the magnitude of it. And being at USA Swimming, being a part of Michael Phelps's 8 Olympic gold medals during that, there's such something you can take out of almost every Olympics that you work at, but those are some of the more special moments.
Well, when you talk about so one of your positions, your longest position when you look at it, was Chief Marketing Officer for USA Swimming, and you talked about being there for Michael Phelps. So when you explain your job as a Chief Marketing Officer of USA Swimming, what exactly does that entail? What were you doing at the time?
Oh, it's a perfect question, because whenever you meet somebody new and you tell them you work in the Olympic world, their immediate question is, okay, so what do you do the other 3 years outside of the fourth Olympic Games? And but what people I think some realize is USA Swimming at its heart is a membership organization with 400,000 members. These are 8 to 18-year-olds on swim teams across the country. And so I spent just as much time working on the grassroots, encouraging kids and families to get involved in the sport of swimming. I spent as much time with that as I did the Olympic side of it. And so it was a real balance of what I call grassroots and gold medals of, and our job was to represent the brand of USA Swimming and the sport of swimming, to A, promote and sell sponsorships around the greatest athletes in the world in the pool, and equal amount of time of how do you encourage that 8-year-old to try swimming on a team for the first time. And it was the balance that I absolutely loved, and that's what made the job so exciting, is to have that youth and fitness piece complemented with the Olympic side.
Were you swimming? Were you a big swimming person before the job?
I could swim. But no, I didn't really come from the sport. I grew up playing kind of what were considered the more traditional sports at the time, baseball, football, basketball, track. And so never swam competitively on a team. Obviously loved the recreation side of it. And then later in life, started to get into swimming for fitness a little bit more in the pool. But it was also I think, a testament that you, for some roles, you don't have to be a deep dive expert in every sport that you're involved in. But if I have one piece of advice that was given to me as well, is come in and learn and respect the culture of the sport, and really take the time to listen and learn the culture of the sport that you work in. And but over time, if you have other skills, whether they be writing or video editing or communications or social or administrative and financial, you have a lot to give to any sport, whether that's your natural first sport that you grew up with or not.
Like, skills are skills, no matter what sport or where you go with it, you never lose those skills. If you have those tools, you can use it all the time. And that was kind of my question, was like, did you ever, like, because you're talking about as the chief marketing officer and marketing in general, you're communicating to people, right? You're trying to convince people, you're trying to convert people to do things, to take action. So was there a level of difficulty when you were trying to communicate to a youth to be able to participate in swimming? Because that's ultimately what were you trying to
Yes.
them to do, is right? Convert them to be members and to start swimming.
Yes, it is hard. And put yourself in a position of whatever sport you know the most about, try to put yourself in the position of a new person to that sport and assume you don't know anything. With golf, you have to learn the equipment, you have to learn how to hit a ball. You have to learn the unwritten rules of golf and how to behave on a golf course. And all of those are intimidating to somebody joining the sport of golf for the first time. With swimming, we had a lot of that, but swimming, if you're going to join the sport for the first time, there's a perception of early morning practice. The water might be cold. We all have modesty issues about wearing a bathing suit. And then there's just the, no matter what sport you join, they're like, am I going to be good? What if I'm not, what if I suck at this? So you have to overcome all of those. You have to overcome all of those in order to get somebody to just try a new sport for the first time. So whatever your favorite sport is, just think, imagine if you knew nothing and just started on Google that you wanted to try baseball, taekwondo, gymnastics, and put yourself in that mindset of how intimidating it actually is to try to pick up a new sport. And then imagine your 8-year-old self, you know, trying to do that with hopefully a parent. But that's a lot to overcome to get somebody to try a new sport. And once they're in, they try it, they like it, and they find the sports that they like. But getting over that first step is always, it's always a challenge.
It has me thinking about when I was like 8 years old, and I have a younger brother. So he was probably about 3, I would say. And we went to like judo. We were trying judo. My dad was like, okay, give it a try for 2 weeks, whatever. And we knew nothing about it. And I remember my younger brother, I mean, it was intimidating. It was intimidating to me too, but I was kind of like excited. But I could tell, like, from the day we got there, he would cry. And the whole session he was crying. And he was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. So it is definitely interesting when you're, especially when it comes to like things like judo, swimming. I mean, just any sport in general. If you know nothing about it, it is intimidating, especially as a little kid. Now, what would you say the certain skills that made you good at your job, that made you great at what you were doing? What skills do they need to be able to have a 13-year career as a chief marketing officer for any sport organization?
I don't know if I've ever been asked that, but I say this in a good way. And my approach is not for everyone, but throughout the course of my career, I position myself as a generalist versus a specialist. And for me, that worked great, where I knew enough social media, how to manage that. I knew enough public relations when things are going great, when people are winning gold medals, and enough crisis communications when things are going poorly. And same with sponsorship and financial. If I tried to get a job in any one of those, what I would call vertical areas, you would find other specialists have deeper experience in those areas than I do. But I position myself of really learning a lot of different aspects of the organization and being a generalist. And especially when you're in a small or smaller organization, and USA Swimming was 90 people, and that's small in the grand scheme of things, having a lot of different skills really served me well. And then you build your team around you in terms of specialists. So I took an approach that I wanted to be good at a lot of things. I'd like to think I'm great at a few things, but really my whole approach was to be good at a lot of things and be able to help out in any situation in an organization.
That's actually the first time I've actually heard anybody give that advice. And for me personally, like hearing you say that is kind of interesting because I'm in the point in the career. So I'm going into my second year of working full-time in sports. And throughout college, I did every single internship from my freshman year of college to senior year. I did event management. I did compliance. I did, what else is there? I did sports information. I mean, I did every single aspect part of it. I did administrative work. And then now my job now is I do game operations. And I even added, you know, I was interim director of the wellness center for like half a year because my boss went on pregnancy leave. So I got that leadership role. And then on top of that, I've been doing student programming and the student athlete development. And I started the Sports is Job podcast where I really dive into social media, marketing, writing, just everything in general. But I've always heard people tell me or say in general, like you have to be specific. You can't be 5, 6, 7 different things at once. Like, you have to hone in on event management if that's what you're going to do. So like right now, it's to be totally honest, I am kind of like, I feel lost in a sense, because I'm like, well, I'm not really special in just one area. Like, in my short career of working full time in college, I've been doing like 12, 15 different things. Do you think that, like, in the beginning of a career, because I can see that as a leadership role, you know, having that whole general sense of everything is good. But in the beginning of a career for like someone like myself, is it just as good, do you think? Like, how would I approach it now that I have like these 15 different things that I have under my belt?
Well, I think it's great personally, because I think even for the next 20 years, you're still going to be sampling of what you like, what you don't like, and how to refine it. But put yourself also in the position of a hiring manager. I think you're on a great path if you wanted to be someday be an athletic director at a school, for example. But even before the virus, and now it's amplified by the virus, of you're going to see lower staffs, lower budgets, and I think there's going to be such a strong trend of, I need this new employee, Colby, to be able to do a lot of things, a lot of different things, because I just don't have the same budgets that I used to have a specialist. Now, by the same token, if you put your resume in a pile for something that's very specific, social media expert, you know, financial expert, whatever it might be, maybe you don't get that job anymore because you've had a broader experience. But I'm a big believer that we look for, it's an overused term, but it's a jack of all trades type approach, has a lot of merit, especially when budgets get tight and you need people to be able to adapt and do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And you'll start to see job descriptions that list 10 to 15 different skills of what they want in an employee, and you think it's very unrealistic. But the reality is they're just hoping to, maybe if I can get 8 or 9 out of the 15 in one candidate, he or she will separate themselves.
I think you definitely are seeing that. And I think I've seen it too. Like, that's kind of one of my predictions as well, is that like a lot of companies are going to be downsizing. So they are going to be looking for the people of jack of all trades, or maybe look for an outside company they can hire at a cheaper price because they don't have to pay full-time benefits and they can do a contract basis type of deal. So one of the things,
I mean, real quick, easy example, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
You've worked in game ops and merchandising and social media and comms and sports information. And your colleague, your buddy over here, has worked 10 years in event operations experience. Who do you think has a better chance of getting the associate or athletic director role? And I think it's you with the breadth of experience in that case.
Yeah, and I think, like, you mentioned something earlier about how, for example, if you were applying for a more specific job, maybe your chances aren't as high. And so for me right now, I think that's in the job market. When you look at it, I think people are looking for a lot more specific positions, and maybe, you know, within the next couple months or year, maybe that will change. But I can definitely see in the long run how it would benefit me. And I see how it benefits me now. It's just the fact, I think, you know, it's something that I tell people and we preach with the podcast, is that there's no set path to where you want to go. And sometimes I do have to remind myself that. And I think the fact that you said that, of, you know, not being a specialist in one thing, but being a generalist, like, that just kind of hit me personally, because I'm like, okay, well, that's exactly who I am. And it's interesting to see somebody 20 years down the road of experience of certain positions where I can say, well, now I see somebody. Now there's that representation of who I thought I am. Now it gives me hope and it gives me that possibility and opens the door saying, hey, if Matt can do it, then there's no reason why I can't do it as well. So that's why when you said that, it kind of hit me, and, you know, hit me personally for me.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I'm very, very biased, I will admit, but stay the course. You're on a good track.
Perfect. I appreciate it. Now, in our last conversation before we hopped on the podcast, you talked about understanding when to take the leap, when to make the change. And there are certain parts in your career where you make that change. And one of the first changes that you make is you go from working in the Olympics, right, with the Olympic Committee, and then you worked with Warner Home Video. You worked with that for a year. So let's talk about that leap or that change first. Like, why did you make it? And then ultimately, you know, you made your way back into the Olympic world and the sports industry. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, with a little bit of quick context as well, you know, my dad's generation, he worked in the same industry, same company for 50 plus years. I worked 13 years for one organization, which seems long. And the more modern trend is 2 or 3 years, maybe in an organization and jumping. There's no right or wrong to it. But it's trying to sense when the right time to leave an organization is. And it's not always just about, can I make 10% more on my paycheck at this job and I leave? It's not always that. It's finding the right time strategically of when to make the leap. And so when I went to Warner Brothers and I temporarily left sports, and you're going to laugh at this reference, but just bear with me. But it was a time that DVDs were brand new. And they were the emerging technology. They're already on their way out, you know. But I saw it as an opportunity to get, and it was also the early days of the internet and marketing products on the internet in the late 90s. And so I saw that as an opportunity of where better to really learn online marketing than Warner Brothers and capitalize on what was then a new technology with DVD. And that was a break from traditional sports information. And I saw that as a great opportunity to learn. And I did that for about a year and a half. And then the Olympic world came calling again. And I just couldn't resist it. I couldn't say no.
So, and that's the cool part is now you've kind of had the perspective of you worked in college athletics, you worked for the Golf Channel. Now you're starting, you start your own agency. And then, you know, you worked outside of the sports industry. What makes the Olympic sports world special to you? What, you know, how would you describe working in the Olympic sports area?
You know, besides kind of what we already talked about the combination of the grassroots and the gold medals, I mean, that's really the key to it. But something about representing a global property on a global stage. And even just youth sports in general, and the Olympics in particular, it just felt to me like it stood for something greater in life. It was more than just a sport. It was more than just wins and losses on a scoreboard. You were making a difference in people's lives, kids' lives. And that was the emotional attachment. I call it it's a passion role. And so that was the differentiator to me. People can get that same feeling from pro sports. That just wasn't me. I got it from the Olympic side. So that was really the differentiator. Mm-hmm. And being, especially in the U.S., we get so caught up with the U.S. being the center of the universe in sports. We call baseball, we call them the world champion, you know, and a lot of sports that are, you know, primarily based in the U.S., we call them world champions. And mm-hmm. Are they really? They're not. And so in the Olympic sports, you know, the tracks, the swimmings, the gymnastics, the skiings, those are truly world and global events. And that was always exciting to me.
Then that's for me, I'm a big like UFC fan, boxing fan, wrestling fan. So like them, when they say world champion, I truly believe it, right? Because they're competing against people across the world. Like you were saying, there's no, I mean, who knows? They could pop up a team, teach people in Europe how to play American football. Next thing you know, they could be dominating all our teams here. So like, it is weird in that sense, right? Like they're not true world champions, you could say, compared to the people who compete in the Olympics and the UFC and boxing and things like that.
No, I talked to someone from, you know, the UK yesterday, and we were talking about sports that he was interested in. And he goes, I'm in football. And then he was really quick to correct me, like, no, the real football, which means soccer.
Yeah. One of my good roommates is from India. And he does the same thing with the whole soccer. And he's been watching American football, but he doesn't watch it as much. And then he taught me the game of cricket that they play out in India. And That's they were great. Telling me they play for like a whole, the games will last for like a whole day sometimes. I'm just like, how can you watch cricket but not like American football? So like the difference between cultures and like what people like is super interesting to me. Getting back to your journey of taking the leap and understanding when it's time for a change or doing something differently. I mentioned again that you worked, you know, as a chief marketing officer for USA Swimming for like 13 years. And then you went on to work at the Golf Channel. So talk to me a little bit about that transition.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, getting to USA Swimming, that was the moment in my career that I knew I needed to turn on and do more with revenue generation. Mm. And that's what led to the role with USA Swimming. And then we experienced a lot of success in that in 13 years at USA Swimming. And I wanted, at that point, my internal clock went off that I wanted to do something that was a little more entrepreneurial in sports. And, you know, on the surface, going to work for Golf Channel, which is part of NBC Sports, that doesn't sound very entrepreneurial. But it was a very developing sports property with World Long Drive of men and women hitting a golf ball as far as they can. It was an emerging sport property that was being developed. And so I had a chance to be involved with something that was relatively smaller in scale, but was still, you know, contested globally and had a chance to build it. The fallout from COVID unfortunately changed a lot of those plans, but that was a lot of the thinking.
And speaking of COVID, you started your own agency in the midst of it all. You mentioned it in the beginning of the episode. So tell people a little bit about that. I mean, what is it like starting an agency in the middle of this whole pandemic and is what's going on in the world?
You know, it's hard. And, you know, I think if I wrote the game plan, starting a new business during a pandemic probably would not have been on the plan, but life changes. But I do really think going back to the situation that we were just talking about with you and that, you know, that generalist approach, I do think sports organizations and leagues and governing bodies are going to I think you are going to see a trend of hiring some contract and or marketing agency help in the short term to transition before ramping up staffs again. And so I'm in a position to be patient and build this over the next 4 to 6 months. But even just starting this within the last few weeks, already starting to see really positive signs of what can happen with a client base in that, in the baseball industry, in the Olympic sports. And it's also a chance that now I've built a resume that includes the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, USA Swimming, Warner Brothers, and Golf Channel. And I felt like that body of work really set me up to stand out as a consultant who has experience in a lot of different aspects of sports. And so it's trying to scratch that itch of when it's the right time to do something for yourself and not work for, not work for another organization and company and see what you can build. And I'm young enough and have the energy that I felt like this is the right time, and I'll ride out the pandemic side of it and we'll make it work.
It's an exciting new chapter. I'm sure that you've been, you know, you're excited about it. But it's cool to see that, to see somebody, you know, take that leap and make that jump with everything going on. Such a positive and such a big negative, you know, big negative world right now.
Well, I call it 50% bust down the locker room doors excited and 50% scared to death. So that's 50, a good 50. Mix. They're both motivating for different reasons.
That's what I was going to say. Being scared does motivate you to get things done.
So sorry to interrupt.
No, the last thing I'd like to end with is I'd like you to kind of just reflect on your career working in sports. You know, what did it mean to you? You know, how does it make you feel that you've worked in sports for so long?
I think the complete, simple answer, and it's going to sound a little bit cliche, is I've enjoyed every day of my career. That doesn't mean there aren't hard days, and there aren't days that completely suck, and there are topics that are gut-wrenching and difficult. But I've never got up in the morning one day not wanting to be a part of work. And that's pretty hard to do. And I feel very fortunate that I've had those type of careers. You know, maybe we question a few days where you've got a project that you just don't want to touch that day, but that's usually pretty short term. And so it's, you know, if I had to get up and sell more coffee mugs every day, it just wouldn't be as motivating to me as waking up and being a part of something as exciting as sports.
Thank you to Matt for taking the time to hop on the podcast and have this conversation and share everything he did. I know personally, it was an amazing time to have this conversation with Matt. I mean, you heard it, the experience that he has, the advice that he's given. For me personally, I'm going to be able to maximize my full potential and really just navigate the sports industry in a whole different way. And I know that you probably feel the same way as well. So if you're listening to this on the Apple Podcast platform, please leave us a rating and review. And of course, share this with others that you may think find value as well. I mean, this is what we're doing it for. Sports is a job. We are the home of the aspiring and current sports industry professional. It's our mission to help you navigate the sports industry. And again, until next time, we are all in our own individual journeys, but you are not alone.